Hello, welcome to the Bearded Tits podcast, hosted by me, Jack Perks. Professionally, I'm a wildlife cameraman, but I dabble in podcasting, and each Tuesday, we release an episode as I have a chat with scientists, artists, filmmakers, and passionate people all about nature in a light-hearted and certainly not serious way. Hello and welcome to the Bearded Tits podcast. I'm your host, Jack Perks, and welcome to the final episode of season four? I think it's season four. I don't know. Final episode of this season anyway. So it's been great. I've had a real good time recording, a lot better than I thought I would actually. And I'm going to talk a little bit more at the end of the pod about what's happening with the future. Some good news, some bad news, and some new things coming up. This week's guest, however, is Jack Cooper. And Jack is a paleobiologist, which is quite possibly the most rad job ever. And he is a specialist in Megalodon, which is a species that I have been dying to do a podcast on for ages. I was really struggling to find someone. And Jack popped up and I thought, well, he's the perfect guest for this. Before we do that, I want to talk about, for one last time, buymeacoffee.com. Now, buymeacoffee.com is a way that you, the listener, can help support the podcast. It's an independent podcast. I have no sponsors. No one gives me any money to do it. It's down to you, the listener. So if you can support me financially, that is greatly appreciated. It costs around about a fiver, the cost of a coffee or a pint, and you can keep me ticking along, which means I can stay independent and I can say and do pretty much what I like. Now, if you can't support me financially that way, there are lots of other things you can do. You can share the podcast. You can write a review. Reviews are fantastic. Wherever you're listening to the podcast, give it a review. You can subscribe to my YouTube channel, which is Chasing Scales, something that I'm really trying to push. I've got lots of content coming out this year. So if you are kind of missing the podcast, check out some of the stuff on YouTube. I've got a YouTube live event on the 21st of March, which as of this podcast coming out is about 2 days. So if you want to join me for a live chat, any questions that you want to ask about the podcast, come along, chuck some questions in there. I'll probably be having a little whiskey or two. And we're going to have a live chat on YouTube. That's the 21st of March, 6:30 in the evening. Now, as I said, I've been dying to talk about Megalodon for a while. It is just a species that is bonkers to think how big it was. Although, to be honest with you, I don't actually know the exact size of it. So I'm going to be talking to Jack about some of the myths and legends, crazy conspiracy theories. Are there still Megalodon around? Things like that. And some of the kind of stuff that we know, like what they ate, how big they got, where we found them. Everything you're going to want to know about the Meg. Here's our chat. Well, welcome to the podcast, Jack.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for coming on. How are you doing? You're good?
Yeah, I'm good. And yourself?
I'm good. Strong name. I like Jack. We've had a few Jacks on the pod, so that's always good.
Excellent.
And you were saying just before we started recording, so just to give people some background, I've wanted to do a podcast on Megalodon for ages. I've been dying to do it. But I need to find the right person. So I just put a tweet out and what, 5 or 6 people suggested you? Something like that. you're obviously the Meg man.
Oh, well, that's very nice of you to say. I think maybe it comes from the fact that I am biased, but my supervisor is Dr. Catalina Pimiento, who I consider to be the world-leading expert on Megalodon. She is the only person to my knowledge who's done a whole PhD on the thing, and she's published the most on it or the second most.
Wow. Okay. But you're being taught by the right person then?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Well, look, do you want to just explain before we get into it a little bit about yourself? Because you described, am I right in saying you're a paleobiologist?
Yeah, that's right. So I'm a PhD student at Swansea University studying paleobiology, but specifically focusing on the functional diversity of sharks through time and into the future. And while doing all of that, I've also done some work on Megalodon.
It's crazy. So I suppose we should start with, why do you think people are so fixated on it? Because there must be hundreds, if not thousands, of extinct species of shark. But if you said to someone, name a prehistoric shark, I mean, I'm not even sure if you would cast them as prehistoric because, you know, in evolution terms, they've been around relatively recently. But what do you think it is about Megalodon that captures people's imaginations?
I think there's a short answer and a long answer. And the short answer is because it was really, really big.
Yeah.
But the longer answer to that would be not only its size, but also all of the implications of that. The fact that we know from Foster it was eating whales, which is mental. We don't really see that in today's sharks. It's also, as you were saying, it went extinct relatively recently in geological terms, only about 3 million years ago. And if we consider that dinosaurs went extinct some 66 million years ago, and the first sharks survived about 400 million years ago, that is really, really recent. And that puts into perspective, really, that just a blink of an eye away from today, we had this enormous predator swimming around everywhere in the oceans.
Oh, they had, well, I was going to ask you this later, actually, but seeing as you brought it up, so they had quite a wide distribution, did they?
Yes, so their fossils have been found on 6 continents, all of them except Antarctica. So generally, they were swimming wherever they wanted and all over the place.
Wow, I didn't know that. Has there ever been any findings in the UK? Have we ever had Megalodon remains here?
There have, yes, and they're very rare. To my knowledge, it's only in a couple of places you can find the teeth, and they're really, really rare. The Red Crag Formation is one such place, and a lot of those teeth are reworked, which means they fall back from the rocks and into younger records, so we can't really date them properly. But most recently, there has been a tooth found in near Essex by this wee lad who went to the beach and just found a meg tooth there. And rather annoyingly, I was in Essex for a conference the very week that tooth was found. So I'm very, very jealous of that guy.
It was fate. It was fate that that would happen. Oh, that's incredible. Because I think Morocco's like kind of like the holy grail for shark teeth. Is that right? You get a lot of shark teeth there?
You do. And Morocco is actually probably the holy grail for finding Ototus obliquus, which is one of Megalodon's ancestors, from right after the dinosaurs went extinct.
Got you.
And I swear, just about every tooth I've seen of that species seems to be from Morocco.
Right, okay. So there's a bit of a hot spot there. I mean, I'm going on slight of a tangent here, but you always see like fossil shark teeth for sale. I don't know if you know much about this, but like, is that industry sustainable? Like, is it an okay? Because obviously, like, I would say that taking teeth from real sharks isn't great, but presumably if you're just picking up fossil teeth and selling them, like, is there a downside to that, or is it all pretty kosher?
So I know it exists. I haven't engaged that much in it, but no, I know that Megalodon teeth in particular can go for quite a lot of money.
Yes, they can.
as generally fossil collectors like their big fossils, which just makes sense. In many ways, they're the easiest to find. And finding a small megalodon or even a small shark tooth in general suggests you've got a pretty good eye for fossil hunting.
Yeah, no, of course, that makes sense. So you mentioned three million years ago, Megalodon went extinct. Do we know why it went extinct? Because this is a top successful predator. Like, what would change for it?
So it's probably quite a convoluted story. There's a lot of studies will come out and they'll be painted as we found the single cause of Megalodon's extinction. Mm. And odds are it was more of a combination of factors. The fact that it was so big and could go wherever it wanted was great at its peak, but it's not so great if oceans change and their habitats are lost. So in a time called the Pliocene, which was the time Megalodon went extinct, we think that sea levels were changing quite rapidly and ultimately lowering. And that would have meant less area for the sharks to move around in, and therefore less habitat for them to live in, which would have affected them and also their food. And given that this is a massive shark that needs to eat thousands and thousands of calories a day, if it can't keep up with that, then that's not great use for it. And at the same time, it's been proposed that newly evolving great whites might have been competing with Megalodon, though I suspect this was mostly with juveniles that were living in nurseries in coastal sites. So ultimately, I don't think the great white as a whole can be blamed for Megalodon's extinction. I think that's too simplistic, but I don't think they helped either.
Right. I didn't know that. So there was a little bit of a crossover then. Great whites. Were they almost sort of filling a niche in a way, would you say? Or is it just sort of coincidence?
It sort of depends on who you ask. There's been a couple of very, very clever studies recently that have extracted isotopes from the teeth of the fossils. One study used zinc, and they suggested that megalodon and great whites occupied similar niches or trophic levels. So in that case, yes, that would seem to be the case. But then just a few months later, there was another study that did the same thing with nitrogen isotopes and suggested that megalodon was possibly two trophic levels higher than the great white. So in some ways, it depends which study you believe. And I lean more to the latter study, as the former one, while very, very clever methodology, it ultimately used teeth that were calculated as coming from small or juvenile megalodons of, say, 6 or 7 meters. And that's about the size of a maximum great white. So I would think that's where we would see competition. And oh, it's also a bit hard to believe that a 15-meter megalodon was competing with a 4-meter white shark.
Yeah, you would think that if the white shark was smart, it would keep out of its way.
Yeah, one would say, and we, of course, we don't know. We don't have a time machine to go back and look.
Yeah, that would help, wouldn't it? You mentioned like what they eat. So yeah, I guess that's another reason why people are so fascinated with them is because these things were literally eating whales, weren't they?
Yeah, so one of the best kinds of fossils you can find are called trace fossils, which is just any evidence of behavior kept in the fossil record. A great example would be a dinosaur crab or a footprint or something. Megalodon does often leave behind rather nasty bite marks on whale vertebrae. And sometimes you find the tooth in the vertebra or next to it, which tells you that the tooth fell out when the attack happened. And perhaps even more amazingly, there are some fossils that show evidence of healing, which tells us the shark's attack failed and the whale somehow miraculously survived, which is key evidence of predation. But it also means you're seeing some really, really nasty injuries in the fossil record.
Some tough whales as well, if they're going to survive getting shunted by a megalodon.
Yeah, and it's thought in the couple of studies where this has been described, it's thought the whale did not survive for much longer, which is not too surprising.
No, because what's well, I mean, it was sort of the other way around, but I know recently, like literally a few days ago, I mean, I'm sure you've seen it, there was the footage of an orca smacking into a great white. Have you seen that?
I have, and I've got a somewhat of a tangent story about that, is that in South Africa, you might be aware that there are these two killer whales called Port and Starboard that have been killing great white sharks for their livers. And as of this recording, there was a very recent study that found that Starboard was able to do this on his own, which is mental, because at the time we thought killer whales often double teamed on sharks, and they still do, but we've never seen one orca do it by itself. And before I was a practicing paleobiology, just before I was even a master's student, I was lucky enough to intern in South Africa with the ecotourism industry and conservation industry with great white sharks. And I just so happened to be in Hornsby in 2017 when one of these great white sharks washed up after being killed by these orcas.
Wow, because isn't it? It's quite a drastic thing to the ecosystem, isn't it? Because as far as I'm aware now, like that, it's not the same, is it? Since these orcas have started hunting great whites, I don't know where they've gone, but there's less great whites there, isn't there?
Yes, there was a the great whites seemed to just take off and vanish
You
after
can't
this
blame
happened.
them, can you?
No, and
No.
it's very typical thing you see in lots of prey when they're running away from predators. But it was like an instant, they were just gone. And this
Wow.
has been happening repeatedly since 2017 now, which is not great for the ecotourism industry in South Africa, because they really rely on those sharks for their income. But on the other hand, it's also such a fascinating piece of nature that we haven't really had got to see in this much detail before.
Because yeah, I remember like historically, if you wanted to go and see great whites and specifically cage dive, you went to South Africa. That was just the thing for decades, really, wasn't it? Whereas now, I don't know if it would be worth. I mean, I don't know what the industry. You might know more than me. What the industry's like now? Like, is it still running, or is it not quite like it was?
It's still running, but they don't get anywhere near as many sharks. And even when I was there, the numbers had been declining. It's certainly not what it was some 20 years ago. And some of the colleagues I met there are still there and are right there in the middle of the action.
That's incredible, because it makes you think that if the sharks are aware that orcas are predators, then this isn't a new thing. It might be that we're discovering it newly, but they know to get away from orcas. So it must be something that's been happening, but not observed, maybe.
Yeah, quite possibly. And it was the same with this very recent study where we've now seen only one killer whale was needed to kill a great white. And we had no idea until last week or a couple of weeks ago, whenever the paper came out.
Was that footage? I mean, again, I've only seen the clip. I don't actually know that much about it. But was that footage of port or starboard in South Africa, or was it a different orca?
If it's the one I'm thinking of where the orca just slams into the shark, I don't believe it was port or starboard. And you can usually tell it's them by their dorsal fins, where starboard's dorsal fin flops to the starboard side and vice versa for port.
Oh, got you. Okay. So it's not unique to orcas eating sharks in South Africa then? It's other parts of the world they're doing it as well?
It seems to be, yeah, but it just seems to be that South Africa is where it's happening more and more in recent years.
That's bonkers, because I'm planning to go to Adelaide next year, hopefully, to go and cage dive with great whites, because it's pretty good there. But I remember the tour company, I had a look on their website, and they have had orcas come in the area before, and then the great whites, just they get the hell out of there. So even in that part of the world, they know to stay away from orca.
Oh, well, I hope you do see great whites when you go there.
Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, I suppose if we had a few more megalodon, that would sort the problem out. That would kind of tip the scales a bit and get the orcas down a touch, knock them down a peg.
That's a nice way to pivot back to megalodon.
Yeah, I'm just, I've been doing this a while now. I can work it all out. So how big was megalodon then? Because obviously we know it was presumably was it the biggest shark ever?
Yes, that's correct.
It was
the biggest shark that has ever lived.
And what size do they get to?
So it's interesting because there are a couple of different ways people have calculated megalodon size. And as you might imagine, they all come from measuring the teeth. Because we've never had a complete skeleton of megalodon, which is a big fawn in all of our sides and makes our jobs a lot harder. But their teeth are somewhat similar to great white sharks, even though they're not direct relatives. They're not even in the same family. So generally, what scientists have done before is they have taken the height of the tooth and they've matched that to the length of the shark in great whites, and they've applied that to megalodon, altercating for tooth position. But it was then found by school children, oddly enough, that this could not be used accurately in what we call associated dentitions, essentially a group of teeth that we know came from one shark. So about 3 or 4 years ago, there was a new method that used the width of the tooth instead, where if you know the width of the tooth and you know its position in the jaw, you can get the width of the jaw and therefore the length of the shark. And from that, it's been suggested that megalodon's maximum size was conservatively about 20 meters long.
That's still a big shark.
That is an enormous shark. Whale shark today is the only shark that comes anywhere near that size. And even then, it rarely gets over 15 meters.
That's incredible. And it's interesting that you just said that it's not closely related to great whites, because whenever you see like artist impressions, they generally just do it as a big great white, don't they? But is that? I mean, I suppose we don't know, do we? I guess, do we? But that's what people normally show megalodon in pop culture, isn't it?
Yes, and part of the reason for that is that the great white can be considered what we would call an ecological analog to megalodon. Although it wasn't a direct relative, its ecology was probably most similar in that it's a top predator that eats marine mammals. And they also share a lot of physiological adaptations as well, which in big marine animals can lead to similar body shapes. So generally, that's why you tend to see a shark that looks relatively similar to a great white shark in most scientific reconstructions.
Right. So it's not unreasonable to assume that it probably looked somewhat like one.
I would say its body shape probably was similar to the great whites and its relatives, yes, just because of the way how similar its ecology seems to have been to a great white, yes. Obviously, finding a complete skeleton would go a long way to solving that. But we're thankful in the sense that sharks have remained geometrically similar for millions and millions of years. So because we have so many living sharks still with us, they do provide us a good template to use to try to work this out until when or if a complete skeleton is found.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. And we were talking earlier about them eating whales. Wasn't one of the facts with the prey that whales started to kind of shift their diet as well? Like when Megalodon was going extinct, baleen whales were coming in. Is that right? Or am I making this up?
So baleen whales were a prey item for Megalodon. We know from biomarkers they were eating baleen whales.
Okay.
But it is thought that when Megalodon went extinct, those whales actually started to get bigger. So when I do outreach and talk about Megalodon eating whales, I like to say that because the blue whale was thought to have evolved some 2, maybe 1 million years ago, I'd say that perhaps if Megalodon were still around, albeit your conspiracy theorists, then we probably wouldn't have our blue whales.
Yeah, that's really interesting, isn't it? So it probably would have been taking prey, what, maybe like the size of a minke or bigger than that?
Maybe. So we did a 3D modeling study where we took a vertebral column from Belgium, basically a bunch of vertebrae to make up a backbone, and it's the most complete Megalodon fossil in the fossil record. And by filling in some gaps using the great white and his relatives, we reconstructed the shark and we calculated its stomach volume, how many calories it needed to eat every year based on its ecological analogs. And from that, we found that the stomach of an approximately 15-meter megalodon, so that's probably about average size, was actually big enough to consume a prey item the size of an entire killer whale, which is about 8 meters long. And if you think, it was like you were saying earlier, perhaps we need more megalodons around to deal with the killer whale problem for sharks.
Yeah, that would definitely do it, wouldn't it? And you mentioned conspiracy theory, so I might as well bring this up because people love to talk about this online that the Meg could still be around or it's gone to the deep sea. But I think, and I suspect you'll confirm this, that it's probably bollocks.
It is 100% bollocks.
We would know, wouldn't we? We would know.
We would know. We do love to get our phones out these days, and we all love the beach, or who doesn't? Combine that with the fact that we have ecotourism looking for whales and even sharks, and we rather tragically have overfishing that kills 100 million sharks every year, and particularly the biggest ones. If we take all that together, we would definitely have come across a megalodon by now.
Because I like the deep sea theory, because it is sort of it is an alien world and we don't know much about it. But you mentioned then about calories, like there's not a lot. Well, we don't think there's a lot down there, so they'd have to eat a lot of food. And I think if there were a load of big giant sharks, we'd probably know by now, I would think.
Yeah, our 3D modeling study suggested that an average megalodon needed to eat almost 100,000 kilocalories every single day.
Yeah.
And if we take the fact that most of the marine life in the deep, deep, deep sea, like Mariana Trench deep, like in the movie, is mostly microscopic, I would bet good money that wouldn't even feed one megalodon, let alone a whole population.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, you must get bombarded with the Jason Statham films of people mentioning this too. Have you seen the Meg? Have you seen the films or not your cup of tea?
I can say that in almost every interview I've ever done, yes, I do get asked that question.
Yeah, I bet.
To be fair, I love getting asked that question because I love paleo media in general. I think media is a great way to depict our field of science. The movies are a mixed bag. I think the first one is fun and nonsense. I enjoy it for what it is. It's not going out of its way to say this is science. It's a silly, dumb Jason Statham movie, and it knows it. The second one is just a bad movie.
Yeah. I actually went to the cinema to see the second one because I was like, I've got to get a bit of this. And you know what? If you can just switch your brain off for an hour and a half, then why not? It's good fun. You mentioned, obviously we've talked about whales, sorry, through this. And I think one of the things that's fascinating is not only did we have Megalodon at that time, but there was also a large predatory whale at the same time. I've got to get this right now. Is it Leviathan? It's not Leviathan. I think they couldn't use that name. It's Leviathan or something like that. And that was competing with them, right?
Yeah, so there is this incredible skull fossil from Peru belonging to this massive sperm whale called Leviathan movellae. And as far as I know, it's the only fossil found, but there might have been a couple more since, so don't quote me on that. I'm definitely not a Leviathan expert, but it's thought they got to almost as big as Megalodon. So they were probably occupying similar trophic levels, and as you say, probably competing for the same prey.
I mean, that's bonkers, isn't it? Not only have you got one large predatory animal at the same time, you've got two, and one's a shark, one's a big sperm whale. It's bonkers, really, isn't it?
It is quite a lot to think about. Yeah, it must have sucked being like a mid-sized baleen whale in those days.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to be around them, would you? That would not be fun. Because yeah, I've seen again some of the artist's impressions, and it is basically a sperm whale with very big teeth, is what the impressions have given.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I've seen a replica of the tooth of a Leviathan, and it is massive.
That's mental, isn't it? I mean, that would, because people always show like giant squids getting eaten by sperm whales in artist's impressions, but like Megalodon and a Leviathan having a fight, that would be something to watch. That would be incredible.
That would be quite cool, yeah. And not to make a case of which side I favor, given my expertise, but we do have evidence of a megalodon bite mark on the tooth of a much, much smaller sperm whale, but that would have also been a similar kind of sperm whale to Leviathan. It's just a single tooth, but it's got a scratch mark on it that perfectly matches a megalodon tooth, which seems to indicate that a megalodon came from below and bit it on the head, which would suggest it was killing it. So what that tells me is that even if it was much smaller sperm whales, mind you, Megalodon could eat predatory sperm whales, which is pretty mental. You don't really see that in today's sharks.
No, so what we're saying is Megalodon is the best, basically.
I would say that yes. If you happen to
Yeah,
get, if you happen to have a guest on the future who's more of a Leviathan person, they might say differently.
exactly. No, I think we can say the Meg is the top dog. They are just incredible creatures, and it's mad to think that they were around. So I'm trying to think. I'm just thinking of my paleology now. Would there ever have been a cross? I suppose people, we would have been early hominids, or would there have been people around? There wouldn't have been, would there? Not 3 million, 4 million years ago.
Certainly not Homo sapiens, but
No.
some hominin ancestors, I believe, would have been.
So that is crazy to think that, yeah, there was some kind of humanoid around at the same. I mean, the mind boggles. It's kind of an idea for a bad film, isn't it? You can imagine just some early ape man having a swim and a and Megalodon scoffing them. It wouldn't even need to chew, would it?
I would like to see that movie now you've described
There
it.
you go. Yeah, well, we can pitch it. Someone will take that for sure. That'd be great. I mean, look, I could talk all day about Megalodon. It is fascinating. It is incredible to think that we had these creatures swimming around our oceans, munching whales at one point. It is bonkers.
It is quite incredible, yes. And the more we dig into it and the more we learn about it, it's like it gets more fascinating because not only do we know how high it was in the trophic level, like it was literally the top of the food at the time, not only do we know its diet, but we also know it had some really unique adaptations. Like it was what we call mesothermic. So, like it could regulate its body temperature at its most important organs. And that is something we see in very, very few sharks today. It's seen in the great whites, which in part does justify the analog of its appearance, but it's also seen in makos. It's seen in one species of fresher shark, and it's also seen in other big sharks like basking sharks, and most recently has been found in a small-toothed sand tiger shark. So to think there are just eight living shark species we know of that have this adaptation, and yet Megalodon also had this, which probably meant it could swim faster and swim further in long-distance migrations. That tells us quite a lot about how the shark might have been living, and that in itself is also endlessly fascinating.
Would that mean it could go into colder water then, or?
I imagine it wasn't swimming around in polar waters, but
No.
yes, it does mean it could have dealt with slightly colder waters much more easily. For example, it probably wouldn't have minded UK temperature waters at all.
Really? Well, I mean, we've actually done a podcast already about great whites in the UK, but I mean, it's sort of. I guess it'd be interesting to touch on that actually. What are your thoughts on that? Do you reckon we've got great whites or not?
Well, at the moment, of course, we have no direct evidence we have them, but I know that the water temperature at the moment and the environmental elements are kind of just right at the moment for white sharks. So, although we have no evidence of them now, I would not be surprised if we did start seeing them within the next 15, 20 years or so. And we are already seeing new sharks like the small-toothed sand tiger. Just last year, three of them randomly wash up in English and Irish coasts, and we've never seen that before. So it would not surprise me if we have more species of shark coming, including eventually the great white.
Because I've got to try and get this right now. I think the nearest we got was, I think it was somewhere off the Bay of Biscay, maybe, or it might have even been off France, but it was something like 198 nautical miles. And when you think that great whites can migrate thousands of, miles, that's nothing. So they're nearby already. I mean, there's a population in the Med, isn't there? So it's not a million miles away. And like you say, maybe the sea just gets a little bit warmer. I mean, there's enough food for them. I think we've got something like 70% of Europe's grey seal population is around the British coastline, so they're not going to starve here.
No, certainly not. And you're right, there is a population in the Mediterranean Sea, albeit I think it's relatively rare to see them. But you're right, they're not that far away. And we do have a lot of seals. My resident Scotland has lots and lots of seals around for it. So maybe that's a bit north for them now, but in a few decades, who knows?
Well, it wouldn't shock me. I mean, we get close relatives, don't we? Like poor beagles, and Mako occasionally. Mako turn up in the UK as well, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. We do get a population of poor beagle sharks in particular, swimming around Cornwall and that sort of area. So their relatives are here, so there's no physiological reason why a great white wouldn't eventually end up here.
I'm not sure if everyone would want to see that, but I mean, if I was kind of nice and comfy on a boat, that would just be epic to have a great white swim by. It would be amazing in the UK.
It would. And I think if we made an eco-tourism industry out of it, someone could make some good bucks out of it.
Well, they do blue shark trips, don't they? I know I've done a couple actually. Like you can do them off Cornwall and the Welsh coast, and that's incredible being in the water with those. Obviously, you don't cage dive because they're just kind of like puppy dogs compared to great whites, but that's pretty kind of sobering because you're in deep water out at sea in the open ocean. You're just looking down. You think, well, it's not if there's a shark there. I know there's a shark there. And you're sort of thinking, oh, this is exhilarating and slightly terrifying.
Yes, and I think up in Scotland you can also dive with basking sharks too. Obviously, they're even more harmless than a blue shark is. But I imagine if someone had a dream scenario of diving with a megalodon after time traveling to 5 million years ago or whatever, I imagine it would be a similar experience diving with a basking shark. It would just be so big, it wouldn't even notice you.
Oh, you reckon that you just wouldn't even be on the menu? It'd be like, I'm not going to even bother with having a crack at you.
I would think so, yes, given that their teeth alone are the size of our hands.
Jesus. I mean, yeah, that is crazy. I wonder if, I mean, you might know this actually. I wonder if there are any kind of models of a full-size megalodon in any museums or anything, just to get a sense of the scale.
There are several,
Oh,
yeah.
are there? Oh,
So
okay.
the most well-known one is at the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C. I've been lucky enough to see it, and it really puts into scale how massive this animal was. I remember just standing there staring at it for what felt like ages. And the most interesting reconstruction in museums right now is in Brussels, where I mentioned before is where they have the near complete spinal column for Megalodon. That has recently gone on display in an exhibit called Giants at the Royal Belgian Institute of Natural Sciences. So they've modeled the shark, and there's an open space where you can actually see the vertebrae in their model. And it's quite fascinating, and it's only a Eurostar trip away.
Yeah, I mean, from Folkestone, just hop on over. It's only a couple of hours. It's not too bad to get to. That is bonkers. Well, look, Jack, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I can waffle about sharks all day, but that was great. So thanks for coming on.
No, thank you so much for having me. I can't wait to hear it.
That was Jack Cooper. That's incredible. A 20-meter shark that ate whales. That's amazing, isn't it? Absolutely stunning. Now, as for the podcast, now I'm going to be completely honest with you. I was planning for this to be the last season. I was going to end the pod. I'd sort of spoke to everyone that I wanted to speak to and who I could get. Because I'll be real with you for a second. If you've ever listened to this podcast and you're thinking, why hasn't Jack got that person on as a guest? I've probably asked them and they've either said no or not replied. So if there's anyone here like, oh, it's weird that he's never had them on. Trust me, I've asked them or they've just not got back to me. So I've tried to steer away from bigger figures now, and I've enjoyed far more talking to kind of passionate people, so more like scientists and just people on the ground, rather than just going for the low-hanging fruit that is some of the kind of named, I don't like to use the word celebrities, but kind of public figures. Don't get me wrong, I do talk to them, but I've really enjoyed just talking to people who are just very passionate about the subjects that they get into. So there will be another season. It's not going to be for a while, though. You're going to have to keep waiting, I'm afraid. It probably won't be for at least another year. The reason being that this podcast is brilliant and I love doing it, but it does take up an awful lot of time. And although many of you do donate, and I really, really appreciate to all those people that do, it's just simply not enough to me to warrant me spending too much time on it. If that were to go up, or if I were to get a sponsor who would let me say naughty words, then I would potentially be keen to kind of keep it going sooner than that. But the reality is that during the summer, which is why I always release this podcast in the winter, the summer I'm just busy doing commissions and TV stuff and whatever. So I think it'll probably be back 2025 in the spring. What that does mean, though, however, is that in the time between then, I can record podcasts during the summer, the autumn. I really enjoyed doing that for this previous season. So I've got an idea. I don't want to say what it is. I'm still going to be interviewing people for next season, but there's going to be a slightly different format to the podcast, which I'm looking forward to sharing. So it's been great. Lots of lovely comments from you all, so I appreciate you kind of tuning in. And the podcast will be back. You're going to have to wait a while. That's not to say I might do the odd bonus episode between now and then. I might release the odd one here and there. But for the next full proper season, it's going to be spring 2025. If you want to join me in a couple of days, like I say, I've got a YouTube live event on the 21st of March. I'd love to have some of the podcast listeners kind of tune into that and get a chance to talk to you. That would be absolutely fantastic. As always, if you can support me on my YouTube channel, that's greatly appreciated. And yeah, it's been great. So for the last time this season, this has been the Bearded Tits Podcast. I've been your host, Jack Perks, and I'll see you next year, not Tuesday. Cheers.